All right, we're live. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Skeet Shooter Society podcast. We're going to start by introducing ourselves and talking about what you can expect from this program going forward. So, ladies first, Miss Delato.
Hi everyone, my name is Victoria Stellato. I am an 11-time world champion skeet shooter. I started back in 2011. I started competing when I was 12, and this was back in North Carolina, where I'm from. And then last year, I moved out here to Arizona, and I've been competing out here. And so I'm excited to get out, meet some of the people around here, and I really want to do this podcast to help bring some coaching to people who otherwise don't have access to it.
All right. Hi, everyone. My name is Matt Goodrich. I've been shooting skeet since 2009. Outside of some All-American titles when I was younger, most of my accomplishments are at the state level in Utah. I've been living here for 9 years now, though I'm originally from Iowa, where I started in the SCTP, shooting all three disciplines. But I immediately gravitated to skeet, shooting all the registered and SSA shoots whenever I could. My motivation behind creating this program was that I've been listening to various sporting clays and trap podcasts for some time, all while wishing there was one for skeet. It's funny, Victoria and I were emailing back and forth about a month ago on a completely different topic, and I just said, "Want to do a podcast?"
And I said, yes, sounds like a good idea.
Yeah, and the main goal behind this is, as you said, growing the sport. When I listened to some of the Sporting Clay podcasts as just some background noise while I was working, it got me interested in shooting some sporting clays on the side, which at the time when I was started working full time, I hadn't been shooting any sporting.
Wow. Well, that's definitely a way to get into something. Hopefully, this podcast can help bring maybe sporting clays or trap shooters into skeet.
So, you said you started in North Carolina. Tell me the story behind that. How young were you at the time?
Was actually 11 the first time I shot a shotgun. Before that, I had shot, rifles and archery and a little bit of pistols. But I was joining my sixth grade, they call it Hunter's Ed, but it's a shooting team, and you have to shoot all three disciplines. You have to shoot archery, rifles, and shotgun in order to be on it. And so I said, all right, I called my grandfather. I said, Poppy, I need you to help me out. And we went out into a friend's horse pasture with his, it's actually a Victor Sarasqueta, an old side-by-side 20 gauge. And I took the first shot. And I'd never shot anything but a 22 before that, and knocked me flat on my ass. I was down on the ground, and I was like, "Whoa, that was cool!" And I got up and I said, "Oh man, I got to do that again." And I'm looking around, and there's a little bat flying overhead. And I said, "Hey, Poppy, can I shoot that?" And he said, in his head, he was like, "She's never gonna hit that." Yeah, go ahead. And so I was like, "Okay," and I guess I must have done something right because I pointed at it. And I pulled the trigger, shot the bat, and I was hooked from that point on. I started shooting trap with school. And then that summer, school was over, so I wasn't shooting with the kids. But the trap season had started. So at the gun club, I wasn't practicing with the trap shooters. So I ended up going over to shoot with the skeet shooters. And they were like, yeah, come try it. They were all very welcoming, teaching me about lead and crossers and things like that. And about a month after I started shooting skeet, I shot my first registered tournament.
That's early.
Yeah. How about you?
Yeah, it's funny. You mentioned side by side. I started out with a 28 gauge side by side when I was 12. So this was back in 2006. And I'm sure yours had a double trigger as well. It was fixed IC and modified. It was a tiny little Stoger. I wish I still had that thing. I could probably hold it one-handed now and fire it. So I got to ask, when you were shooting your first registered targets, was it knocking you flat on your rear end each shot?
No, by that point I had a Browning over and under. That
Oh.
was good. Yeah, fit much better.
Yeah. So The reason why we decided on a podcast and why it'd be great for skeet shooting is just getting people in the door. But what gets people in the door and in order to keep them from coming back is early success breaking targets. When someone does well and improves, that's how they get hooked. If they struggle, shoot lower scores, they're going to be less inclined to come back, as opposed to getting some tips, some good instruction from people who are qualified. They'll go home and for the rest of the day, they'll think about how well they did, the improvements they made, and what to do to break that one target that gave them trouble. And that person will come back more and more. They'll shoot more targets, maybe shoot some registered. Then all of a sudden, they're trading in that casual hunting pump or semi-auto, getting a dedicated clay target shotgun, reloading supplies, tubes. Then they start traveling, getting professional instruction in person. And that's how we improve the sport.
So while we're not providing, professional instruction, and right now we are not associated with the NSSA, we are hoping that you guys can still get something out of this and, learn how to shoot by the fundamentals. I am a level 3 NSSA instructor, so I do have a background there, as well as, what minor tweaks can help you if you're struggling with a target. So we are going to put that knowledge to the test here, and hopefully you guys can use it.
Yeah, and we're going to cover a wide variety of targets. However, some of the very first episodes coming out after this will be on the individual stations, not just how to shoot each target, but how to self-diagnose to improve your own setup, some modifications you can make, how to feel when you should make these changes. And we're also going to talk about the all-important factor of how to look at each target, not just a simple jargon of look here, but really what to look for. And we want to put this content out to help shooters improve and hopefully prevent some bad habits early on, which everyone will tell you are far harder to break. Shells get wasted, time, frustration, especially nowadays, which is far more of a detriment. And also, in the very first few podcasts, we're going to put an email contact in the very bottom in the description. So if you, the listeners, have any questions, email us. We'll cover them. We'll have Q&A sessions.
We do want to hear from you. We want to be able to kind of tailor this to what you guys want to hear. Like Matt was saying, we're going to walk around the skeet field in our podcasts. And so, we do want to be able to offer some tips that we might not cover. Maybe high one, you guys say, hey, what about high one? But we've already gone through four. So.
Yeah, and we'll also come into this with a list of general things to be on the lookout for, common mistakes, how to realize when you are making these common mistakes, because many of them, they're difficult to self-diagnose. Because anyone who's had any success in skeet has probably shot each target the wrong way in multiple different varieties. And that painful experience we can pass on and hopefully save you, the listeners, some frustration. And also, it's not just going to be skeet tips and tutorials. We're also going to have discussions about equipment, guns, stocks, tubes, reloading, ammunition, which I'm sure that's a sore topic for everyone nowadays. And we also hope to have some guests on, not just to pick their brains about all these topics, but there is the human factor of skeet, getting to know other people in the sport. Many of which have just rich amounts of knowledge that go far back from compared to what Victoria and I have. I mean, she and I are both in our 20s right now, so.
Some people have been shooting this game longer than we've been alive, so hopefully we can tap into their knowledge.
Yeah, so I want to mention I'm also not associated with the NSSA in any way, shape, or form. I do not have any certifications whatsoever. The success I've had has been through getting some professional instruction, but mostly the pain of ha trying to figure it out for myself.
That is one way to learn. I was pretty much self-taught there for a few years before I actually started working with a coach, actually Craig Kirkman. Self-teaching is hard, people, so
Okay, now that's something I want to touch on. What was that like?
actually it stuck with me for a very long time. I was kind of very natural to shoot. Actually, I'm still shooting in a way that is kind of natural as opposed to forcing myself to stick with a strict set of fundamentals. But it was incredibly difficult to understand what people were saying because, everybody's trying to provide instruction. All the guys out there have something to say. And so I'm out there trying to shoot, and everybody's like, oh, put this much lead on this target and do this and do this. And one of the big things that I wish I had known earlier was that you're not supposed to look at the lead, you're supposed to look at the target. And because I was trying to look at both the barrel and the target, try to see the lead, I ended up putting tape over my eye so that I could see it. And I didn't need tape. I'm right eye dominant and I'm right-handed. So I needed to look at the target, and I wish somebody had told me that. It was actually, I think, 3 years ago that I took the tape off of my glasses. So I was
Oh,
like,
wow.
oh, I don't need this. I'm right eye dominant. I should be able to just look at the target. And sure enough, took it off, and it was fine.
Was there an immediate improvement, or was it just like taking off the weights strapped to your ankles?
There was not an immediate improvement. It took a couple of months to see a change, but I started immediately shooting where I had left off. And then there was a pretty good improvement.
So going back to the subject of certification from the NSSA instruction, tell me about what that's like, the requirements, how many hours you have to put in, the tests involved, because there are some written exams that are not just a rubber stamp, they actually are quite difficult, and the pass rate is far from 100%.
Right, so people start off at level one. There are four different levels of instructors. You start off at one, go up to two, three, and then master is the most advanced one. And so basically, with a level one instructor, you can be a C-class shooter, and it's not the most in-depth. Basically, you work with beginning shooters like youth shooters and stuff. And you really, all you learn is the fundamentals and how to enforce safety. Where you really get into the meat of coaching is level two. And levels two, three, and four are all taught in the same classroom. And so once you pass your level one, like I said, you have to be a C-class shooter. You have to be 18. That is one requirement. And you have to be an NSSA member. But once you get to level two, you have to be A class. And then you have to show that you have taught for 100 hours at the level one. And so once you do that, you take the course. Yes, you take the test. But it's the level one test is actually the hardest. And yes, if you miss anything related to safety, you automatically fail it. And you do have to have quite a bit of them right to pass. And then after that, the level two, it's more on the field instructing that you're graded on, because you do work with master instructors out on the field and they are doing pretty dumb things and you have to be able to identify them. And then they want to make sure that you can communicate and say, because you don't want to look at somebody and say, oh, you're shooting behind it. Well, why? So you have to be able to stop them and tell them the why behind why they're missing. And then it pretty much goes up from there. Level three, you have to be double A shooter. You have to have, I think, 25,000 registered targets, and then you have to have 400 hours at the level two. And then the master, which I'm currently working on, you have to be triple A, which I have that shot at least 50,000 registered targets. I have that. And what I'm working on right now is the 600 hours at the level three and an NSSA approved youth camp. So that is what you need to get to the master instructor level. And those people, the masters and the level threes, can pretty much work with any level of shooters. And so they have the most in-depth understanding of the sport.
Okay, so two things caught me when you're speaking. The first is the obviously enormous amount of hours, and it's not built on one another. It's not 100 and then another 400 to get to 500. Everything when you get to a new level, it starts at zero. Am I right?
Correct. So we do 100 at the level one. And then for your level two journal, you have to completely start over. It's like I have to add on 400 hours to what I already have.
Okay. And how many times a week would you say, how many hours a week do you average instructing people?
Ooh, that's a tough one. So some weeks it could be 20 or 30, and some weeks it could be two. Usually the minimum for me is two. But if I'm, say, I'm doing a clinic, I might do a couple back to back, especially if I have to travel. And I'll spend 2 or 3 8-hour days out on the field.
Okay, and are you doing most of that from your home club? First of all, what is your home club for those who are
My home.
interested?
So I have kind of two home clubs that I'm actually living at a gun club right now in my RV while I build my house. But the gun club that I'm living at, and I shoot some skeet, but also a bit of sporting clays here, is Double Adobe Shotgun Sports. And then I go to shoot skeet a little bit more seriously. They just have a really great background, and so it's a lot easier to shoot there. And so I like to practice doubles there. But it is the Cochise Gun Club, which is associated with the Sierra Vista shooting range.
Okay, and we were talking about this a couple of days ago. What part of Arizona are you in right now?
I'm in the very southeast corner. I'm in Douglas, Arizona.
And that's not anywhere near Phoenix for those who are listening. That is southeast of Tucson by a couple hours, am I right?
Yes, it's 2 hours to Tucson.
Wow. So right now, I'm living in Sandy, Utah. I've been here for a few years, and I kind of have two home clubs as well. Almost all of our registered targets in the state of Utah are shot at Lee K. However, I recently joined Golden Spike Trap Club, which they have two skeet fields. They're actually putting in two more, which is pretty good for Utah because those who are here, you'll know that while casual shooters can take up all the skeet fields in the entire state, I count five facilities within 70 minutes of where I live, but our registered shoots, they struggle to get 20 people at them. I think our state shoot last year, we were just over 25, and that's counting 12 gauge only shooters. The HOA was far, far less. I want to say maybe 15. So when I noticed how much skeet was struggling in Utah, I initially got the first idea for this podcast, and then I thought, why not put it out to the entire country?
That's a good idea. Get it out to as many people as we can. Never know, there might be somebody in Virginia. I know there's so many gun clubs there, but they just can't get out, get on a field, get with an instructor.
Yeah, I would say those who are listening, who do a lot of registered skeet, they'll probably know you far better than me. You go to a lot of away tournaments, not just one or two states over, but the larger shoots that you'll see in the magazine.
Those ones, hey, they're the most fun.
Yeah, I was going to say next year I've got a couple on my list. You take some care of some things this year, but we'll see about going to the world. I've never been.
We're going to need to go. It's fantastic.
Yeah,
It's a week of just shooting.
I keep hearing from everyone that, of course, it's 100 targets a day or 150 for the 12 gauge event, but after you're done with that, a lot of people just wander around.
You wander around, there's so many different shops at the NSC, and they're all open because, everybody's there. They have food trucks, they're fantastic. And if you do
Okay.
want to leave the gun club, San Antonio is my favorite city.
Okay, you gotta tell me about the food trucks because now I'm interested. What kind of food?
Oh, they have a bunch of different ones, but my favorite is not actually a food truck. It's called Sharky's, and I have chased the Sharky's bus down. It is actually snow cones, and I love snow cones.
Okay, that's an image because I'm just imagining you shucking on your shoulder, running down. It's like, give me a snow cone.
Yes. So sometimes they have an ice cream truck and sometimes it drives behind the field. And I've actually said to my squad mate, quick, go get us all ice cream in the middle of shooting.
So you're getting ready to shoot a pear, and then you hear the creepy ice cream truck music in
Oh,
the
yes.
background. And then, please tell me.
Hurry, quick, get us ice cream.
Okay, because now I'm thinking about Sharkies and snow cones right now. So you're slowly selling it to me that may
Okay.
be worth the plane ticket next year.
Oh, it is. Yep.
Yeah. And so tell me about what you've recently been doing as far as tournaments. Did you just get back from one in the last month or two? Tell us about what you've been doing recently with your own shooting.
This year I've kind of been taking it easy. I shot in Phoenix and Tucson. I did go to the Triple J in San Antonio. That was also fantastic. And then the other shoot that I went to out of state was the Comstock in Vegas.
Yeah,
Less fantastic, but it happened.
it's funny. You and I were talking about that last month, and it was on. I couldn't make it there because it was on the same day as our local April shoot, and I was helping out, help run the shoot because I'm trying to learn how to do some of the paperwork. And it was freezing for late April. If you're in Utah right now listening to this, you'll know that our winter lasted until mid-late April, and it was just horribly cold that weekend. And I pulled up on my phone, what's the weather at the Comstock right now? And it's like 80 degrees.
Yeah, it was nice.
I chose poorly.
Yeah,
I did pretty good at the shoot, but given the weather, but I do regret not going down there. So that is another shoot on my list for next year.
was. I will say it was Vegas was actually pretty cool. I will probably go back, but it is not for the shooters. Now, the shoot itself was run very well, but the locals were. They did not want you to be shooting at the skeet tournament. They were like, this is our gun club where we come to shoot trap. Go away.
Okay, so you're only talking about the casual weekend shooters that just go in there, shoot a couple rounds, hang out.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's another thing we can talk about. What to you defines a well-run shoot? What X factors come up in your mind?
Registration should go smoothly. You want to be in and out. You don't want to have to go back through four times because, well, you looked and you saw that your address was wrong, or your field doesn't match up. Your rotation, it isn't like they have you up for half the shoot on one rotation and the other half on a different rotation. You want to avoid stuff like that. But also quality referees. That is very important for a well-run shoot. You want good targets. You want friendly people there. And ideally, added money. That is a nice bonus.
That's how you draw people from out of state to come in.
Yes.
And of course it's
Added money and
Vegas.
points.
And of course it's Vegas too.
Yeah, that was actually pretty cool. We went to, what's it called? The Red Rock Canyon. That was really cool.
Did you hit the poker tables at all?
I did not. No. The city itself was kind of lost on me because I don't drink, I don't smoke, I don't gamble. I did watch hockey. There was a sports bar in the hotel parking lot, and so I watched a lot of hockey.
Okay.
So what about you? How are you planning on finishing out your year?
Well, really, my year has just started. I mentioned that April shoot, only did part of it because inclement weather, and I had something else planned on Sunday, so I couldn't make the 410. This year, I'm going to attempt to make minimums. I haven't in a few years. I haven't at all in the 2020s. I am trying to conserve shells, which is funny because as soon as I said I'm going to conserve shells, I finally found some at the store. Don't ask me what I paid for them, but I managed to pick up 1,000 in the last 2 days. So I'm just going to keep saying I'm going to keep conserving shells. And that's another topic we can talk about too, ammunition, reloading, just
Where to
intricacies of
find it in a drought?
when to find it. Yeah, I didn't think I'd find any on a Saturday at a Walmart, but there they were,
Yeah.
7 4 packs of Federals, and I haven't seen those in way too long, and they're all 20s.
Yeah.
Yeah, whenever I pass by them, yeah,
Our
whenever
Walmart here has double A's.
I'm not gonna ask how much they're charging.
Haven't looked because they only have 12s and 20s, and I don't shoot those.
Okay, that's something else we can touch on about that some of the listeners will want to know. Tell us about your equipment setup, why you use it, why you choose it.
All right, so shotgun wise, I use a Kohler Max Skeet, and I have the ultralight tubes. The reason why I use the specific gun that I do is because it belonged to my coach who died 2018. So I have been shooting that. I started in 2020, and it's kind of a way for me to make it even more meaningful. I kind of carry on his shooting legacy alongside my own.
Okay, very cool. So tell me about the barrel. Are you using their standard weight barrel or are you using the carrier?
Oh, I use the carrier. Yeah, 30 inch.
Okay,
But
and
my gun comes in just under 11 pounds. It's like 10 and a half pounds.
really, have you put it on the scale to confirm that? Because that's quite a lot. Oh, wow.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, I know the receivers of the Kohlers are about 4 ounces heavier than the K80s. But
Yes.
if you're using the carrier barrel on that, is your gun really stock heavy?
Yes.
Okay,
Yeah.
do you have any added weight other than like an adjustable pad or?
Be honest, I haven't taken it off.
You don't
I'm
know.
assuming that there is to get some because, it is pretty butt heavy, and I do have the adjustable butt plate on there, but it feels like it might have a little something in the stock.
Yeah, because if it's 11 pounds of carrier barrels, even on the older Kohlers before they went to the Max Light, that's quite a bit because I'll get into it when I talk about my own, but I had an 11-pound gun the way mine was set up a few years ago, and that's pretty exhausting, and mine was leaned on being barrel heavy.
So that, yeah, that'll wear you out.
Yeah. So what about your glasses? Do you use a shell pouch or a vest? Why do you choose the lenses that you do?
I prefer the pouch. I like it better than the vest, just to me gets in the way. And then I use Ranger glasses. So I use the XLWs, which give you a little wrap around. I really like to be able to look any direction and still see out the color. And I have prescription, and so they do the inserts, and that's just super easier than ordering all new colored lenses with the prescription. But I primarily shoot in HD lenses, and those have a red tint to them. And the reason I do that is because I'm red deficient, colorblind. So Can't see the orange targets unless I have a red lens in between me and the target. So that is why I use those.
Okay. And I already know the answer to this, but are you a reloader, Victoria?
Oh, sometimes. So my mom actually reloads my 410 shells and my 28 gauge shells, and occasionally I'm allowed to reload the 20s. But normally I get chased out of the room with her yelling at me, smacking me, because I am the world's worst reloader and I will break the machine. It's not that I can't reload the shells, it's just that I'm, I guess, aggressive. I don't know, but I break the machines and doesn't end well.
I wish I had someone to reload my own shells, but I recently broke my perfect record last 2 weeks ago at a tournament. I had two bad shells because the collet in my 28 gauge had broken, so the brass wasn't properly resized and the gun wouldn't correctly close to go off. It wasn't a gun malfunction. It was a and when I inspected the machine, the fins and the collet were broken. I took it out and I could literally snap pieces of steel off with my thumb. That's how worn it was. So that collet probably had about 20,000 reloads through it. So it was probably time to change a part. But going into my own setup, I've been shooting a Krieghoff K80 Pro Skeet since July of 2016. I've had a number of stocks for it. I started with the Precision Fit stock, the Rowo stock, many people will affectionately call. And I played around with that way too much, different weights, different combs, the Ultimate Fit comb. And near the end of 2019, I had it weighed down with brass barrel weights and with the standard weight barrel and Braille Ultimate Ultralight tubes, it weighed 11 pounds, 1 ounce. And that was when I knew I needed to make a change. Shot a factory left-handed stock, left-handed, left eye dominant. Shot that for a year, and then I realized that I need to stop messing around. And June of 2021, I flew out to Pennsylvania and got a custom stock made by Mike at Ottsville, and been shooting that ever since. My only regret is that I didn't do it sooner. Glasses wise, Pila Panther X6s, shoot three brown lenses, 26C IED for those who actually know what the Pila alphabet sh soup letters mean. That's most of the time. Also 10ED and 44ED. So just three brown lenses, dark, medium, and light. Don't change too much. Just depends on the range and how bright it is out. So, what else?
I think we covered pretty much everything.
Yeah, I think this was a pretty successful podcast. We'll leave an email in the description for those of you who are listening. If you have any questions whatsoever, topic suggestions, questions, maybe some recommendations about who we should have on as guests in future episodes, anything and everything, let us know. We want to hear from you, the listener.
And even if you guys say you want to recommend maybe an officer who isn't a coach, it doesn't have to be a coach. If you want somebody on the podcast, we can probably find something to talk to them about, skeet related.
All right, good stuff. All right, thank you for listening, everyone. Goodbye.